While the marijuana legislation adopted this spring legalized adult use of marijuana and made some other immediate changes, state lawmakers and Governor Andrew Cuomo kicked the can on many other specific decisions, including questions about future recreational markets and changes to the state's medical marijuana program. These questions were supposed to be decided by new state panels, including an Office of Cannabis Management, but it's not clear when they will begin their work since we don't have an executive director for the new office or a chair for a new cannabis control board. For more on this evolving and non-evolving issue, we're joined once again by Kaylin Kastetter, Director of Policy Analysis at the Kastetter Cannabis Group, which helps companies navigate the state's cannabis regulations. He's also Vice Chair of the New York Cannabis Growers and Processors Association. Welcome back to the show, Kaylin.
Thanks, David.
So what powers and responsibilities did the Marijuana Regulation and Taxation Act give the Office of Cannabis Management and the Cannabis Control Board?
You know, as you said, there's a lot of work to be done, specifically by the OCM, the Office of Cannabis Management, and then that work in terms of how the licensing is going to roll out, what these applications are going to look like, the two issues like social equity incubators and standing those up, and then packaging and labeling requirements, probably hundreds, if not thousands of pages of regulations need to be written and then approved by the Cannabis Control Board. And, you know, worked on by the Cannabis Control Board. There's also an advisory board that needs to be set up and a chief equity officer, too. So there is a lot of work to be done. And it just, as I said, really isn't being done because of the lack of appointments to the board and who's going to run the OCM. And so there's really not an Office of Cannabis Management yet. There's a website, but there's no real organization to begin working on these issues.
Where is the personnel for these entities, whether it's the Office of Cannabis Management or the Cannabis Control Board, supposed to come from? Are these things where the positions are really spelled out in the Marijuana Regulation and Taxation Act, or is there just a lot of wiggle room with the governor given carte blanche to appoint these jobs?
The Cannabis Control Board gets three governor appointees, including the chair, and then each branch of the legislature gets one appointee to the board, and then there's the advisory board. And the chief equity officer and executive director, they get appointed by the governor, too, with consent from the Senate. So the rest of the positions, like counsel and people that are running the compliance division, people who are looking at these applications, writing these applications, right? I mean, they estimate, I think, over 100 jobs will need to be there. And so the executive director will have a lot of room, you know, that's not really spelled out what those, you know, management level deputy positions, et cetera, are going to be. But, you know, I assume they're going to look at maybe former cannabis regulators in other states. You've seen a lot of states, former alcohol regulators, also maybe just people from other parts of the government, right? Whether it's ESD, Department of Ag and Markets, right, with experience around policymaking or administering a program. That in of itself, that process of actually onboarding the team, hiring them, you know, getting the management structure in place, that is a pretty large task in of itself.
It's been about 3 months since the marijuana legislation was passed and signed into law by the governor. Any indication what the holdup is for the lack of action on any of these personnel decisions, especially the ones that require Senate confirmation? Because, you know, as listeners to this show know, the legislative session ended on June 11th or June 10th, depending on when you set your clocks. So what's happening and what's the holdup?
We were supposed to have this kind of deadline around the June 10th by end of session because, you know, you need to nominate the board and executive director, et cetera. But I think it really boils down to one thing, and this is not new for your listeners or for Albany, but politics. Right. This is an issue of control over what happens in a new multi-billion dollar industry that's supposed to be rooted in equity from day one. These are very lofty goals surrounding the MRTA. And so in order to do that, you know, you want to have the right people in charge. So I think there's a lot of politics around that. I'm sure there's other issues that are taking the governor and the legislature's attention away. But unfortunately, as we see with, like, you know, other political appointees, this kind of desire to wait to the last minute to try to push through certain people and jockeying, I think that's really gotten in the way. And it's really, really unfortunate, right? Because if we want an equitable industry and we want to take these entrepreneurs, whether they're hemp entrepreneurs, legacy market operators, entrepreneurs, or those that are really interested in getting involved and creating innovation in this industry, what are they supposed to do, right? They need clarity, and we need to move along to start getting them licensed and to start standing up a program. The longer we wait, the longer that's going to take. And really, that just plays in the hands of those that are very well capitalized.
In case you're just joining us, we are talking about the rollout or lack of a rollout of marijuana regulations in New York. And our guest is Kalen Kastetter. He's the Director of Policy Analysis at the Kastetter Cannabis Group, which helps companies navigate the state's cannabis regulations. So on this show, we've previously talked about the potential executive director for the Office of Cannabis Management. This is a man named Norm Birenbaum, who was serving as the heir in waiting for this job for years, but there seemed to be a lot of backlash to him in recent weeks and months. Where do things stand with him right now and his potential for filling that executive director job? Is he considered to be out of the running in terms of the industry's sense of things?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I listened to your episode, you know, recently with Ryan from Empire Normal, who pointed out some of the concerns from the advocacy community and the industry with Norm. And, you know, he's served in a position as director of cannabis programs for the, more than a year at this point. So he's overseen the hemp program. And, you know, with, you know, my role at the New York Cannabis Growers and Processors Association, we've been able to work with him on a lot of these issues. And I think it's not a competency issue or anything like that. I think it's a philosophical divide, right, in how this industry is going to develop. And I think that philosophical divide was really put on display this year with the governor's proposal, with the CRTA, and the legislator's proposal, the MRTA. What ended up happening is the MRTA passed. And so the MRTA really is a bold reimagining on how a cannabis industry can be set up on a state-by-state basis. It differs in a huge ways from other states. And so that leadership needs to also be bold and progressive and to really try new things. And I think that the consensus across the industry and, you know, a lot of lawmakers and have said so publicly, Senator Krueger and Senator Savino, that they just don't believe that, you know, Norm really is looking to accomplish those goals in the way that they'd like. And so, yeah, I think, you know, the indication across the board is that, you know, Norm may not be the executive director. I think that was kind of presumed because he was the director of cannabis programs. Certainly, I think there is reasonable expectation that Norm will continue to, you know, serve the state and the cannabis programs in some capacity. But, you know, at this point, I would believe that there is other considerations for executive director. Like I said, someone who's bold and progressive, because that's really what we need. You know, New York has this great opportunity to take a huge market position and a huge position industry set the standard for equity, right? Like true equity and diversity in the space. And we could very easily pass up that opportunity and, you know, like we've kind of done with hemp and hemp extracts, right? And waiting so long to implement a program. And that would really be a shame because we're reimagining the, you know, the restart of New York here. I mean, us as New Yorkers always believe we can do it the best and the biggest, and we really can. And now we have this huge opportunity. And so let's not squander it.
Politico New York was reporting that as late as June 10th, the last scheduled day of the legislative session, there was an assumption that former State Assemblyman Kareem Kamara, who serves as the executive director of the Governor's Office of Faith-Based Community Development Services, would be the appointee for the job of chair of the new Cannabis Control Board. Any sense about what his stamp on that board would be? And how powerful a job is that chairmanship?
Yeah, I mean, I would think that the chair is probably one of the most powerful jobs in the state around cannabis. I don't know him personally. I haven't had conversations with his, you know, views on cannabis, but from, you know, what I understand is he cares deeply about the same communities that have been really negatively affected and persecuted under cannabis prohibition. So I think that's huge. And I also think it's a powerful message to have someone, a person of color, be the chair of the Cannabis Control Board. I think that it should be a requirement in terms of, you know, how we are looking at, you know, who's going to lead this program. But yeah, I mean, in terms of his stances on things and whether he is going to be, you know, what I described, that bold leadership, that would be yet to be seen.
because of the lack of appointments at this point and the lack of filling personnel jobs further down the line, are we behind schedule that the industry and stakeholders might have envisioned? Or is there still plenty of time to, say, roll out a recreational market in early 2022, for example?
There's still time, but that time is running real thin, right? I mean, you really want to see appointments done by the end of this month. So I understand that that's possible. The legislature might be coming together at the end of this month, as early as next week. And so, yes, we still have an opportunity to stay on track. It's going to be tight. It's going to be tough, right? Because, you know, as we discussed earlier, you have to hire, you know, all these people, 100 people or so, to the Office of Cannabis Management and get everyone marching at the, you know, in the same step, right, in terms of the goals and what they need to do and the work they need to get done. And then you're going to have discussions around the proposed regulations from the Cannabis Control Board. You're going to have differing opinions because you're going to have an appointee from the Assembly, appointee from the Senate, and, you know, three other from the governor's office who may not all agree on the way this should go, and an executive director who also may disagree slightly with the direction. And every seemingly small issue for regulations, it has the potential to be a very large issue. And so when you have all that, you can really get bogged down in deliberation. And that's what I think will most likely happen. And then you're going to have a public comment period once those regulations are out. And following the public comment periods with, you know, hemp extracts, now we're in a second public comment period from the past year. You know, there's going to be a lot of industry and stakeholder engagement in that, and you'll probably see changes. And so right there, I mean, it's hard to imagine these regulations being final by the end of the year. And then if they are, you still have to roll out an application period and get people licensed, right? So, you know, I think in a best case scenario, a year from now, we're seeing businesses open.
And after a quick break, we'll continue our conversation about marijuana in New York with Kaylin Kastetter, Director of Policy Analysis at the Kastetter Cannabis Group, which helps companies navigate the state's cannabis regulations.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals in education, human services, and healthcare.
You're listening to the Capitol Press Room, and we're continuing our conversation about marijuana regulations in New York. And our guest is Kaylin Kastetter, Director of Policy Analysis at the Kastetter Cannabis Group, which helps companies navigate the state's cannabis regulations. He's also vice chair of the New York Cannabis Growers and Processors Association. Despite the ambiguity surrounding both the medical marijuana space and the recreational marijuana space, there appears to be the sense that there is a real gold rush moment in regards to marijuana in New York, because there have been reports of one company spending $43 million on a space on Long Island. On this show, we talked about $1.3 million production expansion for a medical marijuana facility outside the Capital Region, and the list goes on. What's your sense of how much money is going to be spent right now in the next couple months, and what are the stakes for companies that are trying to get in the market right now? Is there really a big first mover's advantage?
I mean, there certainly is, because what we know from other states is that the market will be undersupplied off the bat and could be for a few years after its establishment. So anyone, who is in at the beginning has an amazing opportunity. That doesn't mean that they're going to be, you know, winners over the long term. And I think that's kind of a worrisome trend that we see across the country, is that especially these publicly traded companies are really just looking at short-term gains and positioning over establishing a legitimate and long-term industry. So for New York, I mean, our eyes have to be on 5 to 10 years from now and what that industry looks like, whether it's a lot of small businesses and looks like a craft alcohol industry, or it's more so consolidated and looks, you know, this is what we don't want, but looks more like, you know, how we've rolled out, say, casinos, right, where you have wealth concentrated in the hands of very few businesses or individuals, or what we've seen in other states, that same kind of thing has occurred along cannabis. I think there's obviously a huge first mover advantage. And I think some of the concern that I have and the industry has and small time entrepreneurs have, is they're looking around saying, well, I have no clarity on whether I'm going to be able to get a license, what kind of, you know, timeline that's going to be, what some of the compliance costs are going to be. But yet there's 10 medical cannabis producers who know that they're going to be vertically integrated. They expect, obviously, a large amount of canopy space for cultivation to be allocated to them. And they're already making the investments almost at little to no risk. And I think that's unfair, right? And I think that's the sentiment that's kind of spreading is, hey, listen, like, we don't mind the competition. Yes, the ROs, they're going to be, you know, part of this industry in adult use. But let's have a level playing field here. Let's all start at the same starting block, or at least try to, you know, understand they're much more well capitalized. But that, and that's where I think the urgency to move along is there too, right? I mean, I think we need to get to a point where we can get these entrepreneurs out in the marketplace innovating and showing why they might be better than the big companies and showing why they can compete with these big companies. Because without it, it just becomes who has cannabis within a 40-minute hour drive from me, and that's where I'm going to go to buy it. And there might be sold out, so I'm going to buy whatever I can. And at that point, the money just rolls in, right? So I think, yes, there is a first mover advantage. And yes, we also need to see a lot of licenses issued immediately, because it's still not going to be enough. No matter how many licenses, even the state, you know, issues thousands of licenses, it's still not going to be enough in reality. And they're going to enjoy years, potentially, of a very solid and increasing demand.
A word you use there, capitalization, talking about the access to capital that some of these existing companies have. What sort of financing will there be for these small entrepreneurs, these companies that are just looking to get into the space for the first time? Is this something where the state's going to have to step in to make financing available because of restrictions on marijuana at the federal level?
Well, so this is a great question. And yes, there's restrictions, you know, from the federal level that does not allow a lot of traditional avenues of financing. But also, as we know, a lot of small entrepreneurs and entrepreneurs that come from disadvantaged communities or, say, legacy market entrepreneurs who don't have, you know, a track record of, you know, financing, et cetera, wouldn't be able to get financing from traditional sources, banks, et cetera, no matter what, right? So the state does have a responsibility. And they also have authorization in the statute in the MRTA to provide grants and low interest or no interest loans to specifically priority applicants, social equity applicants, distressed farmers, service disabled veterans, women owned business. And I think that's going to be so key because they also expect social equity applicants to own 51% of the business and to exert day-to-day control, right? So if they're going to go into, you know, these non-traditional capital markets and be funded, well, investors are probably going to look to, they want to take a majority. So the law doesn't allow them to, which is positive, but they're going to want to take a large amount of equity. And we want these applicants to hold as much equity in their business as possible, because we know it's going to be a successful business. Like I said, at least, you know, off the bat, the state should look to provide the first money. And when I say that, they should look to provide enough money to get these businesses to a point where they're licensed, they are ready to open, and maybe they need more financing for payroll to build up their inventory, maybe to finish their build out. That's fine. But if you already know you have a license and you have enough money to get to that point, getting, you know, you have a lot more leverage in negotiating financing coming in, because you can at that point accurately project what your revenues are going to look like. So I think there's a huge opportunity here for the state to take some of the money they're going to get from taxes, but not just taxes, but also these fees that they're going to charge the more well-capitalized firms, the ROs, to be in the adult use marketplace. They could actually use that money to now say, okay, we're going now to support and be the first money in so that these people can keep more of their business and be ready to go.
If I heard you right earlier, I think you said you're expecting thousands of licenses. How ubiquitous do you anticipate retail marijuana shops will be, say, in 2022, 2023? And what about further down the road, say 5 years later? Are we going to see as many marijuana shops as we might see liquor stores in a community?
I think at some point, absolutely. And I think that even you might see more, right? Because you have real two distinctions in terms of licensing. One is going to be your point of retail, and you're going to buy cannabis for your use at home or whatnot, right? A dispenser, like a liquor store. Then you're going to have your on-premise consumption, which would be like a bar or a restaurant. Those two don't really compete with each other, just like a bar and restaurant doesn't really compete with a liquor store. when you see as many bars and restaurants serving alcohol as you do throughout the state, I mean, we're talking about tens of thousands of licensed sellers of alcohol, whether it's for off-premise use or on-premise use. And when you look at the numbers, cannabis use can be as prevalent or is as prevalent now as alcohol, right? Especially when it's legal and it's safe and regulated, right? So yeah, it's absolutely in a mature marketplace and you let the market do the work. I think that you see a lot of bars and restaurants maybe not sell alcohol anymore and really look to only sell cannabis with food, right? I just think it's a different experience for people and a different social experience, and people start to make those decisions as it becomes more destigmatized and more available and obviously safe and prices are, you know, reasonable. In terms of off the bat, I mean, you know, there is going to be a desire by the government and absolutely understandable to control the amount of licensing so that you just don't have, you know, maybe oversaturation in places. So there might be requirements on density, et cetera. But I do think that what you see is a lack of access just means that people will continue buying cannabis from their existing source, which would be this informal market, right? So the more access you create.
Informal as in like illegal?
Illegal, exactly. Okay. Yeah. I mean, well, quasi illegal now. I mean, you're not really going to go to jail.
No, but I just enjoyed your word choice.
Right? Yeah. Well, you know, hey, I mean, it's because, I mean, it's a marketplace just like a lot of other marketplaces. Mm-hmm. It's just not regulated and taxed, you know, and that's what we're trying to transition out of.
Right.
Right. So the more access is going to help speed that transition along.
Finally, what have the last few months been like for your business?
It's been very busy, right? We've been bringing a lot of we focus on small, medium-sized businesses that are New York-based and help them start to strategize, look at the law, look at where their existing skills and talents and infrastructure is to potentially become a licensee. And so we've been, you know, working with a lot of different companies. We've been working with a lot of potential social equity applicants and legacy market operators and figuring out how best way to get them in the industry, while at the same time looking at what these regulations and looking at really researching the regulations from other states, what has worked and what hasn't worked. And, you know, what we can propose, whether that's, you know, from the Castor Canvas Group, and we put out a weekly newsletter, we put out, you know, position papers, but then also I'm the co-chair of New York Cannabis Growers and Processors Association's policy committee. And so we're always looking at ways to propose, you know, we have a social equity committee, so working with that, you know, how to propose regulations that are going to achieve these, like I said, lofty goals that the MRTA has and what I truly believe can happen. You know, I might be an optimist, but I do believe we can get there. So it's been very busy, but also really fun and engaging meeting these entrepreneurs throughout the state. I mean, there's a hub of cannabis activity in Buffalo, obviously a bunch of hubs down in the city. I'm in Binghamton, so there's a lot of excitement here all the way up into North Country and Washington County and Saratoga. And so it's really exciting. And it's also exciting that I, you know, now we're all able to travel around and meet people again. So I think this is just a sign of how fun and diverse and robust the marketplace can be in the next year or two.
Well, we've been speaking with Kalen Kastetter. He is the Director of Policy Analysis at the Kastetter Cannabis Group, which helps companies navigate the state's cannabis regulations. He's also the Vice Chair of the New York Cannabis Growers and Processors Association. Kalen, thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, David. And thank you for all you do for the show. It's just such a great show.
Support for the Capital Press Room is provided by Destiny USA. Shopping, dining, and entertainment all in one location. For more information, go to www.destinyusa.com.